KSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Sego.
Buju Anin.
Danach A. Ak Anzeni Shupwithan.
Tante.
Ay, Inuhadike.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Hello, relatives. Welcome back to Words and Culture. This is Melissa Spence with you officially for the Anishinaabe episodes. So far, I've learned way more than ever trying on my own. For example, thanks to Duncan McHugh, I truly understand just how committed I need to be to actually begin learning Anishinaabe Mohin. Previously, I started with children's books with really easy single words and phrases. But after our convo, I realized it's going to take a lot more than that. And Barb Nipinak from episode one has revealed a whole new dynamic with regards to ancient words and phrases and the importance of not cutting corners to make it quote-unquote easier. It's the hard that makes Anishinaabe Mohin what it is. And to be honest, this new perceived hard is kind of freaking me out. I am a slow learner. I'm a late bloomer, and I feel like I'm at the base of a massive, jagged mountain. But still, I persist. My next guest is Patricia Nigwants. If there ever was a modern-day hero, this is she. Patricia is an Anishinaabe Mohin teacher, author, and publisher. She's an appointed member of the Order of Canada for her incredible contributions to the vitality of Indigenous language, and she's been doing this for over 40 years. She's got 14 books out, and they're all related to Anishinaabe language and teaching. I recommend Talking Gukum's Language, one she's dedicated to her grandmother, Margaret Nigwants. We visited Pat in her gorgeous home along a tree-lined street in Winnipeg. It was an early spring day with the sound of gentle rain and cars passing along the street, coming through her open windows.
My name is Pat Nigwants, Wabibishikikwe. I am Bear Clan, and I'm from Lac Seul, Ontario. I have been a language teacher all my life, and I speak Anishinaabe Mohin. I first began translating when I was 8 years old.
Wow.
Eight. I was in a hospital in Sulakut, and everybody spoke Ojibwe at that time.
Wow.
I was in the hospital for 2 months, so every time somebody needed a translation, they would come to me in my bed, and I would translate.
Wow.
It started that early. It's hard sometimes because, you know, obviously because we don't have some words, but you just take the concepts and then transpose them in your mind. I grew up in a household where we all spoke the language, and that's in Lac Seul. But in the school year, I went to Hudson Public School. I did go to Pelican School for 1 year. That's a residential school, and that was a horrible year. But I was able to be brought up by my family after that, and I spoke my language all through my elementary school years. In grade 8, my dad couldn't stay in town anymore, so I had to look for schooling elsewhere. So they found me a place at Shinwalk Residential School in Sault Ste. Marie. So I went there, and I lived there for the next 8 years or so, 7 years maybe. I went to the residential school there for 1 year, and then I went to high school where I was boarding at different homes. And when I was 21, I moved back where I started a native newspaper called Wawate News. And that newspaper is still running. It's, you know, 40, 50 years later, it's still running. But I've been working in language all my life because that's what I do. I've been a translator I love translating. I love teaching the language. And I guess I've been, in the last 30 years, I've been publishing books, writing language books, because I saw a need for them. When I was teaching language, I didn't see any books that I wanted to use, so I wrote my own and published them out of my own funds. I've never ever applied for funding to get my books published. I formed my publishing company, and I've got 15 books already that are under that name, and they're beautiful books. I'm very proud of them. I have a lot of projects that I'm doing. Last year, I did a conference. I organized and held a conference that happened in November. It was a conference to discuss the block that we have in our throats when we try to learn a language, a native language. And that also prevents people like me from passing it on to our children. My son doesn't speak the language because the words got stuck in my throat when I tried to teach him. Fortunately, that didn't happen with my grandson. He speaks the language fluently now. And we talk and joke around in Ojibwe. It was a beautiful conference because that topic has never been discussed at any conference. And I've been going to language conferences for 50 years as a language teacher. And never, ever is it discussed. In fact, I was told one day not to talk about it at a conference. But I devoted the whole conference to it because it's never been talked about. It's such a... I don't know, volatile subject, I guess. People cry, people get very emotionally upset when, you know, they talk about how their families never passed on their language to them, or they can't pass it on, or they have trouble learning it in school. The white students, who are not any smarter, will do very well because there's no emotional baggage in learning Ojibwe. But for Ojibwe language, Ojibwe background students, Ojibwe students, it's very much a big block for them. Same with Cree, same with Dakota, any other native languages, I think. It's happening in the States too, not just here. Happening in other parts of the world, because I talked about it about 4 years ago at a conference in Spain. And many people came to me and said, we have that problem too. So it's a power struggle, I guess. People of one culture dominate another. And that causes that block, the trauma. Another of my projects at the University of Manitoba is planning a 50-year plan for the language, but I think it should go longer than that, 75 years, 100 years, to look far in the future and see how we could save our languages. My department head 5 years ago asked me, can you write me a 5-year plan for our language department? And I said, sure. But 5 years is just a blink. You know, what can you do in 5 years? I did write one, but I went further. I have been writing a 50-year plan because I think you get a better vision of what should happen in 50 years. But I'm going further than that. I will go 75 years maybe, give us 25 more years on top of that. In that 50 years, there is so much that needs to happen in the first 10 years where we are now. And that's because we still have fluent speakers, people who speak the language. that's what we have. And there's so much that needs to be done in this first decade. The number one thing we need to do while we still have fluent speakers is to create new speakers, pass on the language to a group of young people who can speak it as fluently as the rest of us. So we need that group to be this core group. And there is a group in the States and in Manitoba and Ontario. People, young people are learning the language. They're very passionate about it. And they keep in touch with each other. They meet at language conferences and workshops and immersion camps. So we have that group. The next thing that needs to happen is we need to modernize our languages. We have to evolve. Think of what we have today that we didn't have 100 years ago. We didn't have watches, but we have a name for a watch. So we had to create these words that are part of our everyday vocabulary. So that's my view on that. There's just no way that we could, use Stone Age language today. So we need to modernize our language to help it, survive the next 100 years or so. The third thing we need to do is to, we still have fluent speakers, create audio or video materials to be used all the time. And these would be films. These would be scripts written by fluent speakers, because they're the ones that know the language. A script for a fictional piece, where the language, spoken language, is used, so that we have the intonation, all the expressions that we use in speaking our language, just the way we talk. That would all be in these films, and not just films, but audio materials too.
So in your 75-year plan, you talked about the second step being modernization. Mm-hmm. Are you creating new words, or are you just weaving the language together?
Well, some of them, I have my suggestions on a word, and then I'll get together with a group from different dialects, and then we'll choose a word that everybody will understand.
And what does 75 years ahead look like for Anishinaabemowin?
My vision, it's what I wish for, and what I will put in place to make it happen. I can't say that's what I would like. I have to say that's how it will be. Okay? That's how it will be. In that time, villages, maybe 5,000 people in a village that all speak the language. It's like a sanctuary of the language. Anybody who lives there has to be fluent and speak only, not only, speak the language while they're there. They can know English because we lived in an English-speaking world, and the world is turning to English. Everybody there will live in the language. There'll be a hospital where the doctors and nurses and all the staff speak the language. So a person who's sick will be treated in the language. The university will operate in the language. When I was 14, I really wanted to go to university, but I wanted to go to a university where my language is used. I can't go to France and study in the language unless you're French speaking and that's your language. You can do that, but we can't do that. We can't go somewhere else and learn our own, earn a degree in our language. It has to be. That's what I want to see. Everything, the stores, restaurants, everything, the bars. Be going to see films in the language. Everything, everything. Children, babies. That's what will happen. The first decade is the one that I'm working on right now. It's very hard. How can the university support that vision? So I wrote the kinds of courses we need to have, translation courses, a college, a vocational college, you know, any of the colleges, they can teach filmmaking in the language, things that could be done in this decade.
Such a brilliant mind. A 75-year plan for Anishinaabemowin has me thinking, or dreaming, I should say, of entire places in society where our language is not just displayed, like it barely is now, but is spoken fluently by many, conversationally, in places like university, the doctor's office, or wherever you might be receiving service from. To me, it's like how French is to Canada and Spanish to the US. That's the dream. Imagine having the option to speak in Anishinaabemowin while you move through the world. Before we get back to our conversation with Pat, I'd like to share a gorgeous track from Isla Barker, an Anishinaabe and settler heritage singer-songwriter who is based out of Winnipeg. Her mother's family is from the Barron's River First Nation on Treaty 2. This song is from her album Fool Underwater, and it's called Intuition.
Trust yourself, you know best. Face your fears, forget the rest. Listen closely, whispered breath. Messages from deep within. All of the noise makes it hard to hear her voice. All of the noise.
Enjoyed my time with Patricia Niguans. The way Pat speaks about the language holds a quiet passion, but that shines through on anything to do with Anishinaabemowin. I wanted to know what she thought of the statement that you can't truly be Anishinaabe without the language.
That's a harder one, because the language was taken from us. We didn't have any control over it. So we have a lot of people my age even, who don't speak it. And even though they're very proud to be Ojibwe, the fact that they don't speak the language, that's a hard one. That's a very hard one. One thing I say sometimes is the language that you speak, you're operating in that world. One thing I usually say is when I'm at a gathering, suppose it was the Polish people that colonized us. Suppose we'd all be talking Polish and we're not Polish people. We would sound silly during Ojibwe ceremonies in Polish, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Wouldn't it? And it's just as silly for us to be using the English language from England, and we're not English people. It was my grandmother who pointed that out to me. She lived with us. As a child, she learned English because a Hudson Bay manager took her out of her home because he had a daughter the same age, and so he wanted a playmate for his daughter. So she lived with that family for about, I don't know, 3 years till the family moved away. And during that time, she learned English, and that was very, very unusual at that time. She died in 1983. At the age of 83, so we're talking a long time ago, and nobody was speaking English her age at that time. When she went to town, she'd speak English to the people in the town, and they thought that was very cute, you know, to see this little old woman speaking English, perfect English. But one day I said to her at home, in the language, I said to her, "Kokon, why don't you speak English to us in the house? You know, we're learning English at school. How come you don't talk to us in English?" And that's what she said. "Kitanshnabeomen, we are Ojibwe's. We're not English. We are not English. We're Ojibwe's." Never forgotten that. Now we normalize speaking English. When we hear somebody really eloquent speaking in public in English about wonderful concepts, wonderful things, we just normalize it and don't think about the fact that they could be talking Polish. Now, how silly would that be? But they're talking English, and that's not our language. We should leave English behind, the ones in England. When I say that, I think I hurt people. I have to say it. I have to say it.
I love this woman, and I couldn't agree more. We have to say it, regardless of how it's going to be perceived. If there's anything I've learned over my 42 years, it's having the courage to speak the truth when it matters and whenever possible, to do it in a graceful or even loving way. That's true kindness for me. And if we want to get into the Seven Grandfather teachings, well, you'll find the same answer there. I'd love to leave English behind and blast off into a new realm where Anishinaabemowin is vast and as plentiful as the stars themselves. Anishinaabemowin is a longer language than English, so sometimes translating can be very tricky. Pat is involved in an exciting project. She is part of a team that is translating the classic film Star Wars into Anishinaabemowin. I wanted to know how they fit Anishinaabemowin into the runtime of the English version.
That was Dennis Chartrand, who is a wonderful translator and speaker of the language and the teacher of the language. He and I worked on taking the translation and trying to fit it into what you see on screen. because in English there'll be just a couple of words, but in our language you can't say it in two syllables, you know? Can't. So that was really difficult. We had to sometimes just use an expression to convey that same feeling, you know? So it was hard.
Especially, yeah, in a film like that where there's lots of action and people shouting and going back and forth. Yeah. At the end of each episode, we have three words to learn. So if you want to... I know blueberry pie is a little challenging for everybody.
Well, no. My word for blueberry pie that I use and that I hear a lot is Mine bitustajigan.
Mine bitustajigan.
Mine bitustajigan. Seven syllables. Yeah. I know on Facebook they've got a word that's, you know, like a whole paragraph.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I don't like that. It, I know people use that word as a joke, and but it's also intimidating, and I don't like words that are so intimidating. I do know other words that are very long, but they're not used all the time. Like the word for alligator. We don't have alligator, so that's okay to have a long word for alligator, because we don't talk about alligators.
It's more of describing what it is than an actual word.
Yeah. And it's more of a joke word.
Yeah.
Gava pi koku kana gava gwanjing. And it means the peacock, the first part, round, bony, and then the second part has to do with the eyes, okay? And then the last part has to do with this creature floating around. So that's the image you get with that word, the creature that is floating around with bony eyes. This elder came up with that. She was a little old lady, about 80 years old, and she came up with that word. She said, I want to teach you a word. So she told me the word, and I'm so fortunate I could write. So that you write a word, when that elder is gone, you still have the word. That's the beauty of writing correctly in the language. It's like recording.
And I wanted to know how to pronounce I love summer, or how to say it.
If somebody asked me to say that, I would just say, Nimen wenn danki nebing. I love it when it's summer.
I love it when it's summer. Mm-hmm. And the word for summer?
Nebing, it's a verb. We don't have a noun that means summer. Like in English, you could say a summer,
right?
A beautiful summer. It's a noun. But in Ojibwe, it's strictly, a verb. It is summer.
Wow, I have so much to think about now. Getting to meet Patricia in her home was truly unforgettable. I'm inspired to work on my own emotional blocks or hang-ups about the language and truly think of all those generations ahead. And the truth of it all starts with me. How can I contribute to the future of Anishinaabe Mwen? Luckily, Pat's incredible works are readily available online through Birchbark Books, and any of her speeches can be watched on YouTube. Perhaps I'll start with Ga Giga Duda, which translates to Let's Speak, her Ojibwe immersion handbook. Thank you again for sharing your time with us here on Words and Culture. Please share this amazing series with all of your relatives. My name is Melissa Spence. And like I said last time, Naganj. Later.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e ninen yujihina.
Eko se.
Kakuutau. We'll see you again.
You're listening to